Hello and welcome to From Fear to Fire, secrets to overcome fear, embrace your gifts, and achieve success. This is the place where real people share real challenges and where you can find a common bond and uncommon wisdom through their journeys to help you move from fear to fire. I am Heather Hansen O'Neill. I am your host as always. And today's quote of the week is by Rosalind Carter, "A leader takes people where they want to go. A great leader takes people where they don't necessarily want to go, but ought to be." And we may be talking about that a little bit today with our special guest. Today, we've invited on Christy Jones, author of Selling Your Way In. She is a speaker, coach, and sales process consultant. Christy has a take no prisoners approach when helping companies drive more revenue from their sales and customer service success teams. Her mission is helping companies find talent, as well as creating a sales accountability culture. Christy wants sales reps and leaders to identify and embody the practices and characteristics of top 10% achievers. Super excited to have her here. Hello, Christy. How are you today?
Good, Heather. Thank you so much for having me on.
Absolutely. My pleasure. You know, I gave a brief bio, but how about we go back a little bit? Let us know if there's anything that you think is really important to add, and also a little bit about your journey as to how you got where you are today.
Yeah, I'm very self-aware about how I ended up where I am today. And really, I think a couple of things were instrumental. And the first one is I grew up in an entrepreneurial family. My parents owned a Coldwell Banker real estate franchise. My dad was an owner broker. My mother, after 13 years of teaching English and Spanish, left the education profession, got her real estate license over a summer and didn't look back and became a top performer in the real estate community. So I say that my brother, I have a younger brother, and I say that the two of us got our MBA at the kitchen table on a nightly basis. And really like that, like my parents never talked down to us from the get-go. My mother always tells the story of being in a dressing room at a Macy's or Dillard's and talking to someone as she's, you know, trying on clothes and coming out and the sales lady saying, who are you talking to in there? And she's like, my daughter. She was like, well, no, like the adult that you were talking to in there. She's like, that was my daughter. And so, you know, our parents never treated us like, you know, appropriately with children with communication, but, you know, money was a very transparent topic in our family. And so I think both of us, my brother actually took the individual contributor route and is a top performer at his organization. And I followed in my dad's footsteps, as a leader. So first and foremost, like that's where that grassroots happened. And then I tell people that my favorite sales job to this day was a job that I started at 16, which was waiting tables. And there are so many similarities and so many of us in sales started off, you know, in restaurants and retail. And, you know, I said there, you know, that was the best job ever because I got instant feedback on a table by table basis. I didn't have to wait for my annual review to get feedback. The tip that I was left indicated the job that I had done. And as a super competitive person, I loved that job. And I said it was, you know, it was personality packed. It was perfect for me. And so I think I really honed a lot of my sales skills, you know, while trying to upsell or tell people that the steak that they wanted is now, you know, we sold the last one right before I got my order in. So there was a lot of lessons at waiting tables.
Oh, that's awesome. So two things that I'm connecting with here. One is I completely agree with you. Fantastic sales training in waiting tables. I think everyone should have to do it.
I do too.
And the other part, it's not really a common thread at all. It's actually, I'm thinking, gosh, how amazing to grow up in that entrepreneurial home. So I did not have that. And it, nothing against the way I grew up, but when my mentor suggested that I start my own business, I was like, well, people can do that. Like I literally had like no experience in the entrepreneurial side of things at all, other than an entrepreneurial spirit that I didn't even realize I had. So really cool. I can't wait to learn more about that. But what made you decide to start your own business?
I was laid off. I lost my job.
That's how a lot of people start their own business.
That's right. Yeah, I actually, because of having grown up in that particular type of entrepreneurial situation, real estate is a very unforgiving sport, as I say. We had a multitude of horrible things happen. We owned the building that the office was in. We had a fire. My dad's secretary stole from him. My dad had bypass surgery, quadruple bypass surgery at 53. The cigarettes did not help, but there was a lot of stress in there. So, and then the up and down of income, right? I mean, I knew when my dad wasn't taking a salary to make payroll. And so, I had told anybody and everybody who would listen, including the universe, that under no circumstances would I ever own my own company. Although it afforded my family a really nice life financially when things were good, I also knew how stressful things were when, the economy was bad and real estate market was down. But I lost my job, and so I started my hunt for my next, W-2 working for the man gig, as a sales leader, and started to I'd had a really good network I'd built within the St. Louis startup community, and so I started reaching out to those folks, and ran across I actually reached out to a former boss that I had worked for 10 years, and he put me in touch with two people he thought might be of interest to me, and one of them was a managing partner at the biggest VC venture capital firm in Missouri. And then the other one was a husband and wife team who owned a SaaS company that was looking for a VP of sales. So I met with both of them, and the managing partner didn't really have anything on his radar. But a couple of weeks later, he called me and asked me if I would meet with the founder of a cybersecurity company that they just invested in, who needed to build his first sales team. He'd been doing founder-led selling. So I did that and spent 90 minutes with him, filled his notebook with all kinds of like all my best practices of building a sales team from scratch. And he took all these notes. And then as we were packing up and walking towards the door, he said, "This was really amazing. And I appreciate all the things that you've shared with me. Under no circumstances am I capable of doing almost anything you told me needed to be done." And he said, "Who do you think could help me do that?" And before I could stop myself, I said, "I can." And I was in a transition. So I had had, I was staying on at the company. I knew I was losing my job, but they'd asked me to stay on for 3 months as they transitioned it to another city and another department. And that they would give me 3 months severance in exchange for doing that. So I just was like, "I will." And I was like, "What am I doing? I'm really still kind of employed." And so I, carved out 10 hours a week to help him, build his first sales team out. 18 months later, they were purchased by Cisco. So I'm really proud. That was client number one, and that was obviously a big success. And then really, Heather, the universe conspired to put me in the position that I am 8 years later. But I say to people, I have always been a big, pay attention to your surroundings, be aware the universe is, always trying to conspire. But it seemed really clear to me. They're like the husband and wife team, I approached them and said, "I think you should be a fr I should be the fractional sales leader. I don't think you need a full-time VP of sales. You've got two AEs and one SDR. I think I'm taking this consulting path, and I think you should be a client." And they said, "Nah, never mind. Like, we really want a full-time VP." And I go, "Okay." And a week later, the husband called and said, "Would you meet with a consultant that we've been working with locally?" And I said, "Well, sure. Who's your consultant?" And they said, "Mike Weinberg." And I was like, "The guy that wrote New Sales Simplified, like the guy that I've been using his book club. Yeah, that guy." And I met with Mike. We were siblings from another mother, as he says. And he said, "I should absolutely do this. I will make this happen for you." And then he mentored me for the first year as well, gave me his contract, told me how to price things. And then going back to the owner I'd worked for 10 years, one of our channel partners reached out unexpectedly to me during that period of time and didn't know anything that was going on with me, and asked if I'd have lunch, and shared with me that his business had been struggling and they hadn't been profitable for a couple of years, and asked me if I would be willing to take a look under the hood to see if I could find anything wrong. And so I spent that next Saturday with he and his finance person doing just that. At that point, I disclosed what was going on with me. And he said, "Well, if you've got some time on your hands, why don't you come in and do some sales training with the team?" So I did. And after a couple of those sessions, I did the customer success team as well. He called me and said, "This is what you're supposed to be doing, and I want to help you do it. And I actually want to help get you off the ground. I'll take a minimum of 10 hours a week, but I'll pay you up to 30 until you get additional clients to help basically back you." So I affectionately say he was my business sugar daddy. But like the universe was speaking, right? And it was almost, I mean, it was just so loud that it was impossible not to hear what was going on. And so I, after someone who said I would never do this, I never wanted to own my own business, I didn't want the problems that came the way that I'd seen my family's, business struggle occasionally. And yet here I am 8 years later, and it's the best decision I ever made.
Oh, that's awesome. I love those stories. And I mean, I am that story. And I just want to point out the mentor element. That's how I started my business. That's how you really got your start as well. And so, when you're doing the right things, it will attract people who want to help you. And if it doesn't become as abundantly apparent as it was for you and I, seek them out. I'm just talking to my listeners right now. Some of the people that I work with, some of the people that I coach are reticent to make the ask of someone that they admire, someone that's doing what they want to be doing. And I just want to say people are more than happy to share when they've reached a period of success and they've done great. They want to give back. That's
They
their
do.
way of saying thank you to the universe, right?
That's
And so
right.
I just want to encourage people to either ask or energetically put it out there for that mentor to come into your life. So I do like that that was part of your story as well. Let's talk about the top 10% concept and how you
Yes.
use it in hiring when you're talking to your clients.
Yeah, I think I live in this SaaS world, and it's a struggle. There's a lot of reasons why what I'm about to say is true. And the truth is that across the globe, the majority of sales professionals who are selling B2B SaaS are somewhere between 50 and 60% of quota annually. And there's a lot of reasons for that. And I'll call out the venture capital world right now. But sometimes we have unrealistic goals that are being handed down to us from those who want their money back at some point. I get it. But I also think that we're not creating a culture of accountability. We're not holding people accountable, and we don't know how to hire. We're hiring for the wrong traits, I would say. Like they always say, like hire for fit. You can always train for skill, but there are things that top 10%ers are doing differently than the other 90%. And I don't know that we're spending enough time interviewing for that, or looking for that, or understanding that. So, you asked me about an interview question, and the interview question that I ask, one of the ones, but I well I asked this pretty early on, which lets me know about their level of a candidate's level of self-awareness around this topic. And so the question I ask is, tell me three things that you do consistently, regardless of the company or the job role that you're in, that you believe if you do these, you will be successful. Excuse
That's a
me.
great question.
And top 10%ers will say, I'm at the gym by 6 a.m. I have a spiritual practice. I exercise. I eat right. Those type of things. So, they're doing, I say this is the Christieism for that. The work to get to the top actually happens outside of work. It doesn't happen during 9 to 5.
That is so true. Gosh, that is so true. I talk about it's the same thing as the mindset. It's the mindset and the actions that you do consistently in your being. It's how you show up, it's just who you are. And I love that you included it as a hiring question. I think it's a brilliant hiring question. When you're like if you were to say you've got a room full, which you kind of do, the listeners are mostly leaders, sales leaders, right? So if you have a room full of sales leaders, what is the other, like, is there another main, like, this is the thing in spotting? Is it like a gut thing? Is it more based on their answers to some of those questions? Or like, what is it that really differentiates?
Yeah, I really don't like hiring from the gut, because your gut isn't always right. A lot of times we're attracted to people that are like us. And I always say, instead of looking for cultural fit, we should be looking for cultural add. So, how do we, again, leaders should be looking for people that fill their gaps, the weaknesses that they may have. Same thing on their team, right? So the more diverse your team, I mean, statistically speaking, the more successful you're going to be. There's data to back that up, that the more diverse a company and a team is, the more successful they are, because you're getting everybody's perspective on that. I'm a big behavioral interview question girl. So the Christieism is the best predictor of future behavior is past behavior. And so, what they've done in the past is how they'll probably react to a similar situation in the present. And so I always say, take real life examples, right? And in my startup world, in my, B2B SaaS world, I'm looking for risk takers, right? A lot of times these are funded companies. Only like 1 in 5, right? 20 to 25% of funded companies are going to make it. The others are going to fail. So you have to have a pretty high risk profile. So, I ask questions like, tell me the last time somebody said to you, I can't believe you just did that. And what was it? Right? Tell me about the last time you took a risk. what was around that? Why did that make it risky for you? So I like to ask a lot of behavioral-based questions, and I also know that I'm looking for a little more independent lone wolfish type in my world. So, are you more likely to ask for forgiveness or permission?
Oh, I like that.
And then I ask them, tell me about a time that that backfired. So if most hunters will say, well, I asked for forgiveness, and I'm like, tell me about a time when that was the wrong strategy. Again, I'm looking for self-awareness. I also say, like, I can't motivate the unmotivated, but I can inspire the self-motivated. So I also ask a lot of questions around those type of things. Ambition is a big, core competency and trait that I'm looking for. And I think, like, just how people answer. I mean, if you've been a sales leader for a while, like, I guess to your point, a little bit gut from my, like, I know what I'm looking for. The specific answer isn't as much about the confidence level of which they say it. I don't mind a little cowboy, as I call it. I don't mind a little lone wolf. But you have to know yourself as a sales leader. You have to know that that's a personality trait that doesn't bother you, doesn't freak you out. One of my favorite cowboys comes to mind. His name was Jake. And right away, I knew Jake was going to be full on cowboy. Like, he was a 10 in independence and a 1 in manageability. Like, that was the diagonal that I was working with. And so, I sat him down after I hired him. I didn't have any problem hiring him. I've got a very strong personality. But I said, I think you're going to want to try to do some things your way, and that's fine until it doesn't work. And so you and I have to agree right now that when your way doesn't work, that you are going to do it my way. I think that's A player privilege, I call it. That's that top 10% of privilege. If you truly are a top 10%er, then go do you, as long as it's ethical and, with integrity and above board. But if it doesn't start, if it starts to not work and you start to miss quota and not hit your numbers, then we're going to get back on the formula that's working for a lot of the other people.
I love that. That's fantastic. Okay, let's talk about accountability.
Yes.
I am in full agreement with you on how incredibly important accountability is, but I want you to speak as well to the accountability culture that you speak of.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, I say you ultimately know that you've arrived at the culture of accountability when each individual employee holds each other accountable, right? Accountability isn't just coming down from the top. Management leadership is not driving accountability, that everybody's comfortable holding each other accountable. And I think there's a lot of things that I think a lot of steps that people make, we talk a lot about accountability, but we don't talk about actually the formula. So it's like, it's setting proper expectations. It's putting those in writing. It's telling people before things go south what the consequences of not hitting those expectations would be. And so, and having, and again, and pivoting, because, you can't, I say, like, expectations are not a set it and forget it on January 1st, see you again on December 31st. Because, God love our universe right now, but the world doesn't work like that. Like, things are happening at a, we're in an election year. We're coming out of a pandemic. We've got, the Dow is at the highest it's ever been. Like, we've never dealt with these things before, right? And yet layoffs are still happening, right? Across the tech sector. So, we have to be able to pivot. So as leaders, it is our responsibility to set the expectations clearly and to keep reiterating those and change them when appropriate and say, this is the consequence for not hitting those expectations. And the reason why I think the world I live in is not getting to 60% of quota for the most part is because we're not actually pulling the trigger on those consequences. Even if we're having that conversation, when it comes down to it, we're not doing that. And as leaders, like, let's go ahead and talk about the elephant in the room. It looks like failure on your part, right? If you don't want to fire that person who's at 50% because that looks like you haven't done your job. And perhaps you haven't done your job, right? And I say, like, even in the leadership thing, I talk to CEOs about that as well. Like, you have to lay out what the expectations are for the leader. And if, and I said, honestly, like, the leader should, during the interview process, should be able to tell you, this is how I go about creating the culture. This is what happens when expectations aren't met. Here's the proof. And if they say they're going to do it and they don't do it, then the leader should be fired.
I mean, that is so important in so many different elements of leadership. And one in particular that comes to mind because it's recent for me and with one of my clients is like toxic personalities. You say you're going to do something about it, but you never do. And then it absolutely infects the team and the entire organization. And once you finally, do it and you get rid of them, that's when you feel this like, Ah, this breath, like everybody's waiting for you to do it. Just do it. That's what you say you're going to do. So
Yes.
I love that. Now, I am chomping at the bit to ask you about your book, but I'm going
Yes.
to wait for a
No
moment
problem.
because I have to ask you the question that I ask all of my guests. With a show called From Fear to Fire, I need to know, is there anything that is a fear or a challenge that you overcame and the lesson that you learned from it that our listeners might be able to take away today?
Yeah, I mean, I think starting my own business was a little bit scary. Again, I knew that all of the signs were pointing to that. But I remember a couple of years into the business, I was really struggling. Maybe 18 months to 2 years in, I was really struggling. I mean, I was down to like my last $5,000 in the business bank account. And I was like, yikes. And I remember calling my dad, and because he's definitely was on the inner circle list. And he was like, I said, I think I may have to go back to take a real job. And he was like, don't do that. He's like, do whatever you have to do to not do that. And this is what he told me. He said, because he goes, you get to go in and tell people what they need to hear, and they're not going to fire you. He's like, I was
Absolutely.
always so afraid that you were going to be fired from your W-2 job for shooting your mouth off with the truth. Right. And
Right.
he's like, he goes, people like business owners, as my dad was one, he was still working at that point. And he's like, business owners need to hear the truth, and you are a truth teller. And so like, I think that would probably be the other fear to fire is, I'll use an example actually from yesterday. I had a company reach out to me, 20 million plus in revenue, looking for a fractional sales leader. They literally found me on the internet, which PS never happens. Like all of my business comes from venture capital referrals or founder to founder or business to business owner referrals. And so we started talking about what was going wrong, and they had a consultant that they hired at the end of the year that was in there currently. And I started asking, I did my deep discovery and started asking a bunch of questions. And they had lost their 14 months ago, they lost their number one client, who was about a quarter of their revenue. And they were struggling to replace that revenue. And so I asked a bunch of questions, and I uncovered that the two sales reps were not hunters. They were farmers. And so I basically said to them, hey, here's kind of where I'm at after all of this. And they were very transparent. And I said, I feel like I need to be transparent in return. And I said, here's the deal. I said, you've set those two up for failure, because you know that they're not hunters, and you are asking them to do something that is outside of their comfort zone and their trait talents, group. Traits are set by age 10, and you can't change that, right? Anybody can do anything for a certain period of time. I say like 12 to 14, 15 months, you can probably like get uncom be uncomfortable, but at some point you'll either self-sabotage, you'll fail, you'll whatever, you'll quit, you're whatnot. So I said, here's the deal. I built my entire business on reputation, and except for you so far this year, everybody comes as a referral. And I said, you're going to set me up to fail too. And I said, I don't know the consultant that you currently have that you're not happy with, but you've probably set him up to fail. Now, shame on him for not figuring out what I figured out in 30 minutes. It took me 30 minutes to figure out that this was not going to work, that what they wanted wasn't going to work. They didn't have the right people. So I said to them, here's what I think your next steps are, and you can tell me differently, but I think you need to sit down with the COO and the CEO, because he was the CFO, and have a real honest conversation about, if we really want to grow net new revenue by bringing in new customers, we're going to either have to abandon what we currently are doing or add on to the team true hunters. And I said, I think until you guys are willing to make that decision or that conversation happens, I don't think I'm going to be able to help you. And so I think, I'm a truth teller. And even if, and I believe you said a variation of my Christie-ism earlier, so I'll throw it in, but I live by the motto, do the right things and the right things will happen.
Right.
And I believe that's why I'm where I am today. I have been doing the right things by people for years. My superpower is generosity. My motto is, I have 30 minutes for everyone. And that's what I did yesterday, is I did some truth telling. So, I think, there that sometimes that's scary, particularly if your revenue, if revenue is down. But I don't think there's any, I just, after 53 years on the planet, I don't think there's any downside to being honest with people and telling them what they need to hear. And again, in a compassionate and professional way.
Right.
But, they thanked me. He was like, wow, like you're probably right. And
Yeah.
maybe I'm wrong after only 30 minutes, but I don't think I am.
And they get to then make the decision what to do with that information.
That's
You're
right.
just doing your right thing, you know, and I believe in that too. I finally got, after 54 years on this planet, I have finally gotten to the point where I don't have to please everyone. And I'm just gonna speak my truth, right?
That's
And
right.
yeah,
That's right.
so I love that you do that. And now it's time, because I really, really want to hear about your book before we close it out. So tell everyone about, how you got there, why it's there, and, the benefit for people.
Yeah, I'm so excited about this book. It was not the book I set out to write, by the way. During the pandemic, Udemy, who is an online learning platform, contracted me to write a sales course about prospecting. So, the fundamentals of prospecting. And I wrote a 2-hour, I have a 2-hour course out there on Udemy. And so I spent a lot of time during the pandemic with my instructional designer building that course out. And I'm like, well, if I spent all that time, only contractually, I couldn't put it on any other platform, but I could use it to do anything else I wanted to. So I thought I'm just going to turn it into a book. And I hired a book coach, and about 3 months in, I told her I wanted to take a little break. Like, I just wasn't having fun. By the way, I'm a journalism major, so writing is my thing. I love to write, so that part wasn't the problem. But I came back after about 30 days and said, like, I hate this book. It's dumb. It's a how-to. I don't think it's going to add as much value as I want it to add. If this is going to be the first thing I put out, into the public arena. And so we started from scratch, and what I said to her is, what I'm really starting to get passionate about is this top 10 percenter concept. I said, I've been hiring sales reps since, for 20 years I've been in the sales leadership business. I spent my first 10 years in retail, but in the SaaS business. And I said, there are certain traits. I'm now looking for certain things. And I said, I don't think, I said, I use this example. I'm like, Anne's sitting next to Susie back when we actually used to go into the office and had cubicles. And she's like, Anne's confused. She's like, I'm saying everything that Susie's saying, and I don't understand why I'm at 70% and Susie's at 110%. Like, it doesn't make any sense. I'm doing everything that she's doing, but you're not doing everything that she's doing, because what you don't know is what Susie's doing after hours. You don't know about her affirmations or affirmations. You don't know about her visualization. You don't know about her positive self-talk. You don't know about her yoga. You don't know about her spiritual practice. You don't know about her getting 8 hours of sleep at night and drinking 32 hours of water during the day. Like, you don't know what she's doing. And it's those things that I really wanted to say to people, that, those are like the things that you don't think are the difference makers are actually the difference makers. And as a former athlete, and I guess a current athlete, but not one that I get paid to do anymore. But, like, I grew up with all of that. And, I had a sponsorship with Head Rackets. I was a competitive racquetball player. And, like, I worried about all of that all day long. What am I putting in my body? Am I getting enough cardio? What about lifting? What about sleep? Like, what about visualization? Like, my coach used to blindfold me and have me hit the ball at a little bitty can at the front wall. All of those things, like, those were the thing, like, and even now I play competitive tennis on a USTA team, and it's 85% mental and 15% my tennis stroke, right? And
Exactly.
so, I wanted to put a book together. And the other thing is, sales is such a broad world. And so many of us are accidental sales professionals. And we are not being proactive about our career. We're being reactive. And what I mean by that is, you're at the Thanksgiving table, you're coming out of college, and Uncle Bob says, you know what, you should go into sales. Like, you're going to be great in insurance. And you go, well, I don't have any better ideas than Uncle Bob, so I should do that. And then, then one day while you're at a company that you're fairly happy at, a recruiter calls you and says, hey, I think you would be great for this job. And we're flattered. And then we go and we interview for a job that we didn't even know we wanted. And so I call it step changes. And so I spend a lot of time in the book talking about, like you have, if you're in sales, you don't have a job. You should have a top 10%ers have a career. Others have jobs. And so the top 10%ers are also very intentional about how they step change. Like, what's that next step for me? What would that job look like? And instead of waiting for the recruiter to call, they go out and find a job that fits the missing pieces for them. Like, I want to go from selling mid-market to selling $100,000 enterprise deals, right? In this industry, in the healthcare industry, and whatever. Like, I don't think we're spending enough time being intentional, which is, but the people who get to the top are.
Yes.
And again, that's one of those things that nobody talks about, right? Nobody says to them, like, tell me, like, the last three jobs, how did you decide to take those jobs? Why did you decide? Are you working in the right role? Selling the right thing in the right industry, working for the right company and the right leader. And I think so many times we just wait for the phone to ring, the recruiter to call, or a friend to say, hey, like, got an opening at my company. I really like it there. You should come on board.
Oh my gosh, this is fantastic. You know, nowadays it's like, okay, I'm gonna ask my roommate what their major is because I have no idea. It's the same idea. So this time is flying by. So Christy, when listeners are sitting there going, wow, that book sounds amazing. How can I get it? Can you share how they can reach you, maybe grab 30 minutes of your time or get a book or anything like that?
Yeah, so two things I would love you to do. One, if you want to know more about the book and get it ordered, then sellingyourwayin.com will take you to that page and tell you again, you can buy it at all the places that you love to buy books, but we've got some suggestions on that page. And then, Heather, I love it when I come on podcasts. I want people to connect with me on LinkedIn, and I want you to tell me your one takeaway.
Awesome. Oh, I love that. Okay, we'll make sure to put the link to the book as well as the link to your LinkedIn profile, in the show notes for you. I'm sure that you have already given the listeners a million things to think about, but I'm going to ask for one more because that's what I do. So your final parting words of wisdom, please.
I think believe in yourself, right? I think that like if no one else will cheer as hard for you as you will cheer for yourself, and you should cheer for yourself. And so, grab your short skirt, grab your pom-poms, take them with you every day. And you know what? Like, I have no problem anymore calling my friend group up or my circle and saying, when I got my publishing deal for my book, I told my, I have a little inner circle of tennis friends, the girls' tennis night out group, I call us. And I called them and they got together and they brought champagne and they brought flowers and they were so excited for me. And I wanted like, and honestly, like celebrating alone isn't that much fun anyway. So, so I'm like, it's okay to say, like, hey, something really great happened to me, and so tell people, like, be your own little walking, talking brag book.
I love that. That's awesome. How empowering. So, Christy, thank you so much for the information, the wisdom, and your energy today. Listeners, if you love this podcast or if you know any sales leaders out there, share it, get it out there. We love when you
Yes,
do that. And we love when you leave us a testimonial. So, that would be
yes.
fantastic as well. Thank you. And we look forward to seeing you all next week.